Welcome to the podcast version of Taproot TV, where weekly we share with you information for root cause analysis to analyze and fix the real root causes of problems at your company. Working together, we are all changing the way the world solves problems. So let's get straight to this week's episode.
Welcome back to Taproot TV. You know, there are so many things that are getting automated these days. I mean, from cars to when you want to start your coffee in the morning to your airplane, your refrigerator,
air conditioning.
There are so many things. And yeah, that's even getting more so, all the things in your house that are automated now while you're not even there. So one of the things...
Making decisions for you. Artificial intelligence. Oh, dear. I monitor you and decide you would like the air conditioning like this.
Well, if they're learning, like I was talking to Alex the other day, if they're learning from what you do and your actions, then that would come into play.
It might work. It might work.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about today, automation and human error. And so is one make errors fewer, or do we end up with more errors?
Well, that's the whole point of it, isn't it? The goal of automation is to reduce that human error that we all think of as, oh, that's bad. People are so unreliable. And we can make machines that are more reliable, right?
Mm.
That's what we hope.
That's the plan.
and so you get one of these major accidents, though. We were talking before we started this about the 737 MAX accident, where the solution that they implemented so they wouldn't have to train those pilots more.
Right.
So they, you know, we didn't want to do that because that would require recertifying the pilots, which requires simulator timing. Mm-hmm. So we'll just add this automation in that'll make it fly, take care of that human error, pulling back on the stick too much, climbing too fast, and the plane will take care of it.
Right.
And that didn't work out so well.
Did not work out so well.
And in that case, they had a critical system, flying of the plane, and by their own standards was supposed to have double redundancy, and it had only single point failure, which isn't a very good automation feature. If one sensor fails, the automation can do things you don't want it to do, and then you don't train the pilots on it at all. You don't train them what to do.
You know how to override something and correct something when it's
going wrong. The amazing part, I don't know if people have dug much into this accident or not, but the day before, the same plane, the Indonesian airplane that crashed, had the same problem the day before. There was a third pilot deadheading it with the other two pilots who were flying. As they were diving down, he said, oh, what's it called? It's trim tabs is what you're doing, but there's a switch. You flick a switch.
Yeah.
And he yelled out, flick the switch. And they flicked it. And even though they were in such a steep dive, they had a hard time. Both pilots pulled back hard as they could. Barely pulled out. Now, they flew with that system disabled because when you flip these switches, it disabled the system. All you've got is a manual trim tab then. And
so this guy knew this.
So he knew it. They reported they'd had a problem. Mm-hmm. Maintenance couldn't repeat the problem because the only time you have the problem is when the flaps are all the way up when you're in this point in flight and they were on the ground, so they didn't have that problem. And so then the next day, the same thing happened and the plane crashed. Strangely enough, the Ethiopian Air flight that crashed had the same problem, obviously. Right. And the co-pilot, who didn't have hardly any experience at all, just decided to flip those switches. He did. They recovered. But they wasn't still flying didn't think. So he put the switches back, and they went into another dive and died. So they actually had solved the problem. They didn't know
they didn't know they'd done it.
He put it back because he wasn't sure, and it crashed.
Wow.
So, you know, it's one of those things. Automation can be a savior or it can be something that's contributes to an accident.
Sure.
Let's put it that way.
Well, a lot of the things that people relate to these days are the cars. And the thing that they can relate to the most, I think, is that those sensors, they do think quicker than the human mind can think. And they can reassess the situation usually a lot quicker than a human mind can think. But what if something goes wrong with that sensor?
You've got sensors.
Yes.
That a machine can react faster than a human.
Yes.
But the point of driving usually is that you leave yourself a margin so that you don't have to react that fast, which is why you don't tailgate or whatever.
Right.
Now, in theory, when everybody's car is fully automated, they'll be able to link up in in a train and go much faster with much smaller following distances, and that should reduce traffic accidents and stop traffic jams.
Yes.
Because instead of everybody jockeying around for lanes, the automation will do that automatically, and you'll be able to flow more traffic quicker.
Yes.
Now, in theory.
Right.
So there could be some good things come from automation.
Because you're assuming somebody's not going to change their mind.
Well, you're assuming somebody isn't going to come in with a 1958 pickup truck in the middle of, and he's not playing the game at all.
He's not playing correctly at all.
Yeah.
He's ruining the whole thing.
Yep.
Well, it's like, you know, Ken Reed, his truck that he has, and he's supposed to be able to go four-wheeling with it and all that kind of stuff. And then he used that cruise control a lot on his car. Well, he noticed it was not slowing down. Well, it turns out one of his sensors had some dirt on it.
They're like,
did you go four-wheeling? And he's like, it's a Raptor. Yes, I went four-wheeling. And that was, you know, so it's little things like that.
You just have to know to clean off all your sensors
when
you're done.
Clean your sensors. But that awareness, that's where the person has to come in.
So that a lot of times they call this function allocation. Mm-hmm. Well, human factors types call it function allocation. And there's jobs you're going to give to the human and jobs you're going to give to the machine.
Yes.
And so because this machine might be quicker and more reliable on monitoring, you might decide, well, the machine's going to drive the car and Ken's going to do the cleaning.
Right.
His task will be cleaning.
And he's going to keep his eyes on the road.
That's the thing.
Yes.
That's the thing that may not be a very good job for humans.
Yes.
Being a redundant system, having to sit there and watch and be alert in case you need to take over. Because remember, the machine's supposed to operate much faster than you are, so they're not going to give you much time to take over when things go wrong. And if there's an alert noise or something, maybe sort of like you wake up and decide, what am I supposed to be doing?
Right.
And that may not be a successful backup to automation.
No, and I know they build those things into the cars and stuff. Like if your hands aren't on the steering wheel for a certain period of time, it'll do that alarm or things like that. But people are very creative. And they have ways
I don't know how they did it, but of course, I know in the course we do, the Stop a Human Error course, we've got a video of this guy driving along completely asleep. And these people are going along beside him, videotaping him. And he's just completely out of it. And, you know, you're not supposed to be able to do that, right? But it happens. And they've had accidents where, I remember the one was an NTSB investigation. We'll put a link to that on there.
Okay.
It's one of the Monday accident articles we did. And they were in the left lane, which was a, what do they call those lanes? The HOV lanes.
Yes.
And electric vehicles could use the HOV lane even if there's only one person in the car. So they were in the left lane and there was an exit ramp to the left. And so the line went away on the left and the car centered itself between the two lines. And then there was one of these crash barriers.
Yeah.
And the crash barrier had been damaged by a previous crash, so it was already all the way collapsed. And this car ran into basically concrete straight on. And, you know, three or four, it flew out into the other lanes and about three other cars collided trying to avoid that accident. And I would assume the person, because they didn't survive, I would assume the person driving wasn't watching. And just didn't notice that it was bearing off to the left and didn't take over. And the car didn't realize it until it was too late that there was a crash barrier there.
A lot of what we teach has to do with the fact that we know humans are going to error. And these systems, it's almost like their backup is that the human is not going to error. And the human is going to be alert.
Exactly.
And so, sounds like some room for some new safeguards.
So a guy named Jens Rasmussen, was amazingly smart guy, worked for the Halden project over in Norway, which was working on advanced reactor designs. And I was working on function allocation at the University of Illinois. And we got together at a professional society meeting, had lunch together, and he drew this diagram. It was a copy of the goodness of design, or the variables along this thing, and how good the design was up here.
Right.
And he said with old analog designs, you know, that was a pretty flat curve.
Yeah.
It was, you know, if you missed the optimum design by a little bit, the human was good enough to be variable enough that it didn't degrade performance all that much. It did degrade performance, but it was a flat curve. The other curve, though, with automation, you either got it dead right, and it was like 10 to 100 times better than the human. But if you got off a little bit, and your automation wasn't quite the right design, all of a sudden you were way worse than the manual system was.
Yeah.
And so you'd say, well, automation, it makes it easier for the human. It may make it easier for the human who's sitting behind the wheel.
Right.
But it may make it much harder for the designer because they have to be right. Because if they're wrong, bad things happen.
Well, very often we talk about the designer and the engineer of these types of things aren't necessarily the users a lot of times.
Even if they are, they're thinking like engineers, right?
They're thinking.
I mean, I've got a master's degree in engineering, and that doesn't mean I think like everybody else does. Oh. So that's one of the big lessons from human factors is that you have to get the user in design, early on in the design, to not just design it so the engineer thinks it's right, but to have a number of people try it out, test it, and see what works and what doesn't.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden you're going to find out, you know, the way I think, no matter who you are, I'm not blaming engineers for this. If anybody thinks their way is the only way, they're going to have find out that when they get a multitude of users, there's lots of other ways to think about this.
Right. And people's, because everybody's brain functions differently too. So you have to keep a lot of that stuff into play because, so you're dealing with humans failing and machines failing.
So you've got two different systems and you're bringing them together and you're trying to optimize that merging of the two systems. And that's why it's harder to get that perfect design.
Right.
And if you fail, it fails catastrophically a lot of times.
Well, and most people in life realize a lot of times the more electronic things get, the more things that can go wrong. So, I mean, I feel like there's just still a ways to go before full automation really.
Well, wait. So one of the things you would say, well,
or maybe I'm but just
if
nervous.
if we wait, you know, it's the experience. You know, how do you learn? You learn from experience. What happens that makes you learn? You have bad experience,
right? Bad experience.
And so there's going to be accidents that they learn from. I mean, we shouldn't have had to learn from the 737 MAX. They were violating one of their own rules, right?
Yeah.
They didn't have a redundant system, unless you consider the pilot inventing things on the fly as
well, and they had like 5 seconds in between every time they could kind of recover a little bit, and then
did you know that was actually designed to be a much less intrusive system, and somebody decided to crank up those variables and make it put the nose down more and give the humans less time? Isn't that amazing? Somebody actually made that decision.
That's a really
and
good
so they
word
used to have I can't remember, it was something like a really slow rate of the trim changing, and they made it like, and I think it was times 10 or whatever, it changed the rate that much faster because they wanted to intercede.
Right.
And they, once again, nobody thought they were doing something bad.
No.
They thought they were making it good.
Yes.
And they thought they were making it better for the pilots. But it wasn't.
But it wasn't,
And the other interesting thing I was reading about the other day was the testing that was done on this was all with test pilots. Mm-hmm. And test pilots, I don't want to say they never make mistakes, but they are really, really experienced pilots. So they tended not to over pull up too hard. Mm-hmm. They tended to know more about the plane. They tended not to... and I'm sure they had a test where they tested the system, and sure enough, it did put the nose down. But the pilot didn't overreact and pull back too hard again. So they didn't get into one of these cycles where the plane just kept getting steeper and steeper and steeper.
It kind of reminds me of how, like, you know, when you're a young driver and a lot of accidents happen because you overcorrect.
Well, you know, and that's a good example, because when you're very new, you probably don't push it that hard.
Right.
But you get to a certain point where you think you know what you're doing, and that's when you're probably the most dangerous before you do gain a whole lot of experience. And, of course, a lot of people never gain experience at handling cars at limits and that kind of thing. So they a lot of times can overcorrect and cause accidents by overcorrecting, you know, get your car to fishtail or whatever. Yeah. And not know how to get out of that.
Now, that's where some automation has come in and been helpful.
And there has been, right?
Because your car will correct for you.
Unless it goes crazy.
Unless it goes crazy.
As we were talking about, what was it called? The guy at the summit who talked to us from the...
Frank Abagnale,
who was the catch me if you can guy. And he was talking about the FBI, and he was talking about, well, if the FBI, if you got a new modern car, if the FBI can get within, I think it's 35 feet of it, they can shut the car down.
Yeah.
And he said it'll only be a year or two until they'll be able to take control of your car from Washington, D.C. And you think, well, if the FBI can do that, how do I know somebody else can't?
Hackers.
Or some hacker, or... interference could cause me to have something weird happen.
Well, we think some of the systems that are in place out there, some of the most secure computer systems in the world get hacked.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that any system so far has proved itself unhackable. I
don't know the answer to that. I'm not in the NSA.
So
I don't like the idea
of them hacking my car.
So there you go. So this is all the features of automation, and where this all leads is...
Yeah.
Most people haven't even thought about this. They haven't thought about the 737 MAX type automation. They buy automated systems. They're buying systems that have AI features and installing them in their plants, installing them in their fleet. I bet there's trucking companies out there that are thinking about buying automated trucks. And how are they going to evaluate those before they put them into production?
Yeah.
Not how is the manufacturer going to automate, but how is the purchaser going to decide, is that the right level of automation for me? Is that automation reliable? What kind of testing have they done? What functions have they given Ken, the function of cleaning the sensor, which he didn't know about,
right?
And which things are they giving to automation? And is that the right function allocation? And we talk about that a little bit in the Stopping Human Error course.
Yeah, and you know, about the Ken thing, you know, we're hoping that people follow the rules when automation does become more mainstream in a lot of things, but people have to play their role. You can't just close your eyes and go to sleep. You just can't get your book out and read it.
Well,
and
I was looking at Alex's car,
and
it's got little cameras all over it. You're talking about Ken has one. And now you're thinking about it, thinking, well, what happens when it rains?
Yeah.
You know, those cameras are going to start getting an unclear picture. How do they work as well in the rain?
Right.
What if it's a really hard rain? What if it's a foggy day? Mm-hmm. What if, you know, you'd really like it when your senses are the worst in really thick fog for its senses to be the best? But is it? I have no idea. That's another good question,
isn't
it? Well,
and then what happens to the human skill when suddenly you're taken off the job?
Well, okay, so we don't think about that too much now because most of us have had lots of experience driving. So if you get a car that does it for you, you think, oh, I'll be able to. It's like once you learn to ride a bicycle, you can always ride a bicycle, right? But what if you never really got much?
Right.
What if you went through driver's ed with an automated car and you barely learned to drive and now you're driving and all of a sudden in an emergency situation, it says take over.
Yeah.
Whoa.
That's scary.
That could be hard.
Right. Yeah, there's a whole lot to this. It's such a deep topic. And I love our new course that we have. You taught it at the summit, the How to Stop Human Error course, or Stopping Human Error course.
Yep.
It's based on so much of this.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about what people can take away from that.
Our purpose is for this course to give you knowledge and practice at some of these techniques that can help people not make as many errors, so that you can go from poor human performance, which probably The worst would mm-hmm. be an inexperienced driver sure. taking over control of the car in an emergency situation.
And not having that muscle memory or reactive skills.
In which case your odds would probably
yeah.
be less than 50-50 yeah. that would be successful.
Right.
To getting that performance to be only one mistake out of 10,000 times. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge advancement in human performance. Then if you can get it to one in 10,000 and you put several redundant safeguards in place so that each one of those has one in 10,000 chances of failing, then maybe you've got a system that basically you're never going to mm-hmm. fail. It's more than one in a million chance that it's ever going to fail. And you as a individual operator are never going to see a failure occur.
Yeah.
And that's what you want.
That is what you want.
That's what you want. You want to have in these critical systems, there's never a failure. So what we do is we teach them techniques to improve human mm-hmm. performance, to improve that error rate, to make it hopefully get up to 1 in 10,000 times, and teach them all these different techniques, and then they can choose which ones I'm going to implement at my facility to try to improve human performance and actually test and see what works.
I love how you go through all those different human performance techniques and you do some pros and cons about them. So
yep.
people walk away very educated on...
And they all have a pro, and some of them have many, and they all have at least one con, and
yeah.
some of them have many. And some of them you will hopefully leave the course going, gosh, those are good things
yeah.
I'm going to try. And other ones you're going to say, you know, a lot of people are pushing this, but this isn't a really good idea. There's human factors research that says this will not work well.
Yeah. It's such an interesting course. We're having it in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Yes.
September 15th and 16th.
Yes,
look at
it
us.
Is.
We need dates this time.
That's it.
Our human performance is improving.
Yes, it is.
But no, it's a fantastic course.
I think
course.
There was a 1 in 10,000 chance that we both knew that.
Well, we weren't good at dates last week. But we got it this week.
Yes.
We learned from our mistakes. But I took that course at the summit, and it was fantastic. I think... There's so many different things people can get out of it. And we are going to have it here in Knoxville, Tennessee. You and Alex are going to be teaching it.
Yep.
And if you haven't been to Knoxville, September is a lovely time to be here. And we're going to have a lot of information about the course, how to sign up, register, all that stuff on our website. And we'll also have links to it in our descriptions and everything so it's easy to get to.
The other thing we should tell them is what?
Oh,
they
you want
to
subscribe.
Click the button.
Yes, subscribe and hit the
Wherever
notification bell so that you get all of our videos, notifications of when we put them out, because we put them out every single week. There's a lot of really good stuff out there.
They could keep busy for weeks just watching the ones they've missed.
People want some online learning. There is over 150 videos on our
YouTube
page.
I didn't realize there was that many.
Yes. On our
Ben has been busy.
Oh, boy. But they're great. The topics are great, and they're short and to the point, and like, 50, you know, usually 15 to 20 minutes, and you can sit in there and you can learn about all kinds of stuff. So we want you to go to our website, our YouTube page, and subscribe and hit the notification bell. You'll see these on our Facebook page. And also, if you will get subscribed to our newsletter, if you haven't already, go to taproot.com and go subscribe there. That's how you're going to find out about everything. You're going to get all the great blog articles. There's so many things there that you can take home. And
every week there's
so much better.
At least two or three good articles that will teach
yes.
you something besides the ones that say, hey, here's the upcoming courses.
And they're free.
Yes.
They are free. Some valuable years and years and years of experience are built into those articles. So, well, Mark, thank you.
Thank you, Ben.
I appreciate it. I always love this topic. It's so fun and it's scary. the future is scary.
If you can't tell, Benna gets worked up about automation.
I'm getting an old truck. Anyway, we appreciate you for being here and we hope to see you back here next week. Thank you.
Okay, bye.
We hope you enjoyed this week's episode. To view the video version of this episode, visit our YouTube channel or our Facebook page. Please visit us on our website at taproot.com for up-to-date information and blog articles designed to help you excel in your performance improvement program. And please sign up for our newsletter so you'll get the notifications of when new information is released, where we're teaching around the world and all things Taproot. We will see you next time on our podcast version of Taproot TV.